The following is a Hoop Bowl presentation.
What up, Grizz Nation? You're tuned in to the Hoop Ball Grizz Podcast. Isaac Simpson with you, and you can find me on Twitter at Isaac_Rivals. That's ISAAC_Rivals. And with me is my partner in crime, the man, the myth, the legend, David Williams. And you can find him on Twitter at DWill2111. David, how are you, sir?
I'm good, man. Good. A lot better than last show. Like last show, I couldn't hardly walk from the leg day, but it's been a week since then, so I'm fully functioning just to probably destroy my quads again going into tomorrow. So we'll see.
Yeah, man, getting into the gym, man. Like you said, man, when you first get in there, man, it could be tough on you, man, but you gradually gain and it gets better for you, man. I know I got to get back in there myself, but we're continuing our draft coverage today with a very special guest. You can find his work at Viceland, V-I-S-E-L-A-N-D, on Twitter as well as YouTube, and on his personal account at NBA Draft, Mikey V. Mike Weisenberg, how are you, sir?
Doing very well, Isaac. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, man. Thanks for taking a little time to join us today. He was telling us before we jumped on here that he actually, before the pandemic, came down to Memphis. He's actually based in Portland, Oregon. Has friends that work with the organization, went to a couple of games, so that was nice to hear. So he's been in our fair city, man. So guy from the West Coast, taking in a little Memphis. Did you get a little barbecue while you were down here?
Oh, most definitely. Yeah. Got some barbecue, went to the zoo, went to Bass Pro Shop Pyramid. Like, I was a real tourist.
Yeah, man.
Definitely walking down Beale quite a bit. Yeah, great time.
Yeah, good stuff, man. Definitely some great places to go when you come here to the city. But before we get into anything else, man, tell us a little bit about Viceland.
So Viceland is a podcast that I do with my brother, and it was just something I'd wanted to do for a really long time. We had wanted to do, and we just talk about basketball. We talk about a bevy of different subjects and a lot of focus on the draft and past prospects and potential as well. Plus stuff I see when I'm out doing some stuff for Perspective Insight, which is where I have a lot of my work as well.
Yeah, man, you definitely check them out at NBA Draft Mikey V and at Viceland on Twitter, man. Always great work from him. Every year, man, you always hear commentary on whether this is a bad draft class, is a good draft class. And I always push back on that because, man, there are always going to be good players in every draft. Some guys are going to surprise and outperform. Some guys are going to disappoint and so on and so forth. There are years where there's more star power at the top. But obviously, there's some years where there's more star power at the top, but in Mike Weisenberg's opinion, how would you classify this year's draft class and the depth of it?
Yeah, I would always say, I'm with you, Isaac. I feel like every draft class is going to have some good players. Like, you even look back to a terrible draft. Like, one of the worst is the year 2000, and there were still some very valuable players that came out of that draft as well. But yeah, like, you know, as far as star power at the top, I think this draft has it. And then as far as a lot of intriguing bets and, some great, like, potential upside, you know, kind of, probabilities and then just some really good, rotation gambles as well. I think this is a really good draft for that. So yeah, I really have liked this draft. I've liked scouting it, and I think that, you know, you had a lot of players in the NCAA living up to the hype and coming out with good freshman years. I thought the G League Ignite guys that were at the top of the draft both showed a lot of promise. And then some really interesting international players as well. So, yeah, I quite like this draft. And last year was supposed to be kind of like, you know, a down year. And you saw some great rookie performances. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of promise even in what was supposed to be a kind of a bad draft last year. And then I think this one certainly has the potential to be even better.
Cade Cunningham is the consensus number one pick in the draft, obviously. And it's easy to understand why, with the skills that he brings to the table at that size. What are your thoughts on Cade and just how high is his ceiling?
Yeah, well, Cade, I think there's a lot to like with him. And he has the size that you're looking for in, I would say, like, even possibly like a small ball four, but he's likely going to be running a team. He certainly has the ability to make pretty much every kind of pass out there. You know, I think that was kind of like the lazy, you know, weakness of his this year was having the negative assist to turnover ratio. Go and look at the Oklahoma State team and you'll see how many players had like even worse, like turnover percentages than Cade Cunningham. It was kind of a mess as far as spacing. And then the thing that Cade did that I think was quite surprising and was kind of like the major knock on him going in was his consistency as a shooter. And I think people thought he was going to be a good shooter, but he was great. And, you know, just his ability to score at the end of games, his ability to get to the basket, get to the free throw line, handle the ball, which is something I think that he needs to even further work on. But yeah, he is somebody that I think is going to be at the very worst, like somebody that kind of changes around your franchise, and just a great building block. And then at the best, he's, you know, one of the top couple players on a contending team.
Yeah, when you look at that assist to turnover ratio, I think when you have a guy that had the ball in his hands as much as he did, and you're the guy that the opposing defense is key in on, you're going to turn the ball over a lot. But, I mean, you just don't see guys at that size that can handle the basketball the way he does. And you talk about his shooting. That was kind of what people were concerned about going into his freshman year at Oklahoma State. And like you said, I mean, I think he far surpassed anybody's expectations there. I mean, really did a good job of shooting the basketball. So I think the world of him, I think he's going to be a fantastic pick for Detroit. And I think you have some Detroit people saying, can he fit with Killian Hayes? And they're kind of worried about that. But I think with him, I think he's so good. You don't worry about that. And like you said, that size, he's a guy, I think he could play the 1, 2, 3, even some really small ball fours. So I don't think that's going to be a problem at all. I think he's a plug and play guy and he could fit in anywhere. But again, we're talking with Mikey Weisenberg here, Weisland, here on the Hoopball Grizz podcast. There's not much debate, if any, with who goes number one. But starting at pick two, there's some different opinions. Some folks, people think that the Rockets should go with big man out of USC, Evan Mobley, and some think they should go Jalen Green. Man, who do you have on your board at number two and why?
Yeah, I would have Evan Mobley. And my reasoning behind that is I think that I know that bigs are kind of devalued now, but I just think that much like Cade Cunningham, like Evan Mobley is intensely scalable and he's somebody that can play like either big position and is not going to get run off the court in like small ball lineups. He's somebody who's very switchable and makes really quick decisions, has shooting potential, and it is somebody that should be very good around the basket as well. So, yeah, I just think he's kind of a really special big man prospect and has a chance to be among, like, the upper echelon of big men. And then also, like, you know, make it really tough for other teams to stop him in terms of a matchup. With his ability to play either the 4 or the 5 spot. I think he's going to thrive as a center, honestly, like in the new landscape of the NBA. And my thing is, like, I think Jalen Green is somebody who has immense scoring potential. And I watched every G League Ignite game and he was really good. But I think that even with his scoring ability, I'm not exactly sure that just that factor is going to have, you know, the all-around capabilities of what Cade Cunningham or Evan Mobley bring to both sides of the ball. And so in terms of impact, I just feel like Evan Mobley is likely to be greater. That's why I have him at number two. And that's who I would choose if I were the Houston Rockets. But I'm not. So we'll see what happens.
I agree with you. I've heard some talk that they might be leaning Jalen Green, but I think, and some people ask, well, how does he fit next to Christian Wood? But like you said, I think he's valuable. I think he can play the 4 to 5. I think you can play those guys together. The way that he can move and the fluidity that he plays with at 7 foot, I think it's something that you don't see all the time. So I don't think there's, again, the same kind of with Cade Cunningham and you talk about Killian Hayes. I think the same thing with Mobley and Wood. I think you can play those guys together. And I think I think there's kind of a line after Cade Cunningham and Evan Mobley. Not a big line, but I think there is a little bit of a drop-off between him and Jalen Green. I think Evan Mobley is a better prospect long-term, and I love Jalen Green. That's not knocking him at all, but I think if I'm the Rockets, I'm with you. I think I'd go Evan Mobley. But when you look at the international prospects in this draft, the three at the top are obviously Josh Giddey out of Australia, Alperen Sengun out of Turkey, and Usman Garuba from Spain. Who is Mike Weisenberg's favorite international prospect in this draft?
Yeah, I would go with Josh Giddey. I just think that there's a lot to like there. His agent says that he's 6'9" now, but I think at the least he's 6'8". But the ability to handle the ball, pass the ball, at least has some shooting potential. And what he did just this year in the NBL in Australia was really impressive. There have been a lot of comparisons between his season this year and that of LaMelo Ball. I think LaMelo had a bit more self-creation and a bit more scoring chops, but Josh Giddey is just somebody who I think there's a theme here, is very scalable and is somebody that can handle the ball, can just be on the floor as a possible linking piece. And he's somebody that I think is going to have a really nice effect in the NBA with his size and his skill set.
Yeah, Giddey is one of my favorite prospects in the draft overall. Like you said, 6'8", 6'9", just the floor vision that he has is just elite. I mean, some of the passes that he makes, you just jaw-dropping. And I just think he's another one of the guys that's kind of like Cade and Evan that we talked about. I don't think he's a guy that necessarily has to be on the ball. I think long-term he may project as a secondary ball handler. But I think, and I don't have any thoughts that he's going to make it to 17, but I've talked with a lot of Grizz fans about him, and they're like, how does he fit with Ja? I think they could play together, because I think you could play him on the ball and Ja could play out the ball, give him a rest a little bit, or you could put Ja on the ball and him off the ball at times. And I think he's a guy that can be kind of a jack-of-all-trades guy, kind of off the bench that can do some different things for you. I just love him as a player, and I mean, he's fun to watch. I mean, the thing that kind of people kind of worry about with him is his shooting. Does his shooting worry you at all?
Yeah, it doesn't have like the best indicators, but I feel like he's a hard worker, and it did gradually improve throughout the season to the point where you're like, well, this is something that he could possibly do. And shooting also, to me, is a skill that can definitely be improved. Like, you look through most NBA players' careers and they do become gradually better shooters.
Definitely.
Now, it's just, you know, you don't want it to be to the point where you're worried about him defensively and he's not bringing you anything on offense. But I really don't think that's the biggest concern with him, because as you said, he's a fantastic passer. And he just has some skills that should keep him on the floor and should keep teams very happy with having him either as a primary ball handler. But I think you're right. Like, he could be very good next to somebody who is a primary and just be that great secondary option.
Yeah, I mean, I think the positives that he brings to the table definitely outweigh some of the negatives. And I think, like you said, shooting is something that can be improved on. And I think with his work ethic, I think that he'll improve as a shooter. And I think we've seen it is weird that a lot of times you look at guys' international numbers shooting-wise and they get to the NBA and they're a lot better. Luka Doncic's numbers from three weren't great overseas, and you see what he's doing. So I think there's some potential there. I mean, the free throw shooting numbers aren't great, and that's kind of an indicator that a lot of people usually look at for three-point shooting, but I think that's somewhere he can improve. Sengun is another guy that I really like. Man, won MVP of the Turkish League at 18 years old. I mean, extremely skilled, man. What do you think about him?
Yeah, he's somebody that I'm really – it's kind of tough to get a gauge on, because for all the comparisons that he gets, he still is kind of like this – he's not necessarily like a modern day center. He's kind of that throwback.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the production, like, you know, there's a lot to like there. And the fact that he was this productive in a league as good as the Turkish Basketball League, and him winning MVP of that league. And there's certainly, like, you know, there is some explosiveness around the rim. There is some of that passing ability. The shooting with him, like, is While he did shoot well from the free throw line, like, he just has a very limited sample as an outside shooter, and that didn't seem to be something that he really focused on. So yeah, like, the Kevin Love comparisons, I feel, are like a bit much, because Kevin was like shooting threes in high school and at UCLA. So yeah, I'm really interested to see exactly like just how high Şengün ends up going. But I think like I'm thinking to myself, like, usually in every draft, there's usually about 20 or 25 guys who end up being, like, you know, good rotation players or have, like, pretty lengthy NBA careers. It's really hard for me to see him not being one of those guys.
Yeah, man, I like him. I think he's extremely skilled, high IQ, and I think at 18 years old, his post game is pretty advanced. I mean, you just don't see guys, especially coming from Europe, that advanced in the post. And not a big sample size on the shooting, but I think he'll be a guy that can knock down three-pointers. I don't know if he's going to be Kevin Love, like you said, in some of those comparisons, but I think he's a guy that'll be able to stretch the floor a little bit. I mean, doesn't have much of a mid-range game. It's kind of weird. It's kind of inside and then some three-pointers. That's pretty much, yeah. You don't really see anything in the middle of the floor. So that's going to be something to see if he can advance that part of his game. But, I mean, I think he's an intriguing prospect. We'll see where he goes. I mean, there's some mocks that have him in the middle of the draft, and some that have him up in the lottery. So we'll see where he pans out. But
I have a feeling he's going to go in the lottery.
Yeah, yeah. Cause I mean, both of them are in the top 10. I see a lot of mocks having him, but he's an intriguing prospect to me because I think he has some skills that'll definitely be interesting to watch develop. But if you had to pick one player widely projected to go in the lottery that may slip, who would said player be?
Yeah, that was a great question. And every year it happens, you know, like every year you have like 18 players for 14 spots. But I'm thinking it's Corey Kispert. And I know he'd been slotted in the lottery, I think, for like a majority of the year. And he was a first team All-American, don't know if he hit 50, 40, 90, but he was like really close.
Yeah, real close, if not.
He's somebody that he's from Washington and gets comparisons to Joe Harris quite a bit. One thing I will say, as we saw with Joe Harris, is when his shot wasn't falling, there wasn't a lot he was doing very well for the Brooklyn Nets.
In the finals, and it was really
I think we saw kind of the same thing with Corey Kispert, like, you know, in the Final Four. So, I there's certainly still value there, and he is, you know, very projectable with his shooting. And it, like, is a pretty big guy as well. He's a, you know, legit 6'7". I just have a feeling that maybe he was kind of projected a bit higher than he ends up going. He still did get a green room invite to the NBA draft. So I wouldn't be surprised if he was, like, you know, just outside of the lottery, but I'm growing kind of like more towards the notion that he won't end up being in the lottery.
Yeah. He's a guy. I was going to say that he's a guy that me and David have discussed a lot. A lot of Grizz fans are kind of hoping he slips to 17, but we agree with you wholeheartedly. We've kind of talked about that one-dimensional player that I think he kind of projects to be. He's an elite shooter. I don't think there's any doubt that his shooting is going to translate, but the other things, that the foot speed, will he be able to guard? I think those are kind of the questions.
Yeah,
I was just going to chime in real quick. He missed the 50, 40, 90. Free throw percentage was 88%. So, but still. He was not far from it for sure.
Yeah. And he ends up hitting 180, right, David? Like, because that's usually, you know, the number everybody's trying to go towards. But yeah, he was something like 53% from the field and 44% from three.
52.9 from the field and 44 from three.
Right on.
I was 0.1 off.
Nailed it. We'll take it, man. Close enough.
Well, no, man, there's a few prospects, man, I'd like to discuss. And some, my co-hosts, I know my co-hosts would be interested in this first one and your insight there. But James Bouknight, 6'4", 190-pound sophomore out of UConn. What do you like about him, and what would be some of the dislikes?
Yeah, his ability, like he took on this huge self-creation this year at UConn, and he has a lot of talent as a scorer. His ability as a cutter, it really stands out as well. I would say a pretty high level athlete, a little lack of functional strength, but still, you know, ended up getting to the free throw line quite a bit, has some potential, at least as a ball handler. I would like a bit more of him, like as a playmaker, decision maker, but, or a bit more from him, but, and also the shooting, he ends up, I think at 29%.
29%, yeah.
But I think there's at least like a good amount of potential there. I think he was on ball so much and he just had to take all of these tough shots. So I think maybe a spread out floor in the NBA could really work well for him. And yeah, just a lot of potential as a scorer. And even like he's, I think, a pretty, at least has a chance to be a decent defender as well. So yeah, I see him being a likely lottery guy. And I know that he had been kind of around the possible to slip out of the lottery range,
yeah.
But it seems more and more like teams are settling in on him being like a likely lottery pick.
Yeah, my co-host David's a big fan of his, and I was going to say, I wish he was like a couple inches taller, but I was kind of surprised, man. 6'4", but a 6'8" wingspan. I didn't think he was that long, so that kind of surprised me. So that's pretty good. But I think
it's fine. Like honestly, that's like a pretty average shooting guard in the NBA.
Yeah, man. I think that helps some of my thoughts on him being a little bit shorter. I think that helps his defensive potential. But the next guy that I want to talk with, I'm sure you're very familiar with. Being a University of Oregon alum, and he's my favorite prospect or candidate for the Grizzlies, realistic candidate at 17. 6'6", 190-pound shooting guard, Chris Duarte. And tell people why I'm right and he's the next Klay Thompson. No, I'm just joking, man, but tell people what your thoughts on Duarte. What do you like and what do you dislike?
Well, let me just say that if he is next Klay Thompson, I will be doing backflips, sir. I've really liked Chris Duarte the past few years at Oregon. He was fantastic. Even in his first year when he wasn't shooting very well, there were just a lot of other things he was doing, like his ability to play off the ball and then, you know, create some space for himself while he's on it. Always has been a really good defender too, and like just has shown flashes, ability to play the passing lanes, has all of these like athletic chase down blocks that he gets. I just think that he is that likely plug and play kind of wing where, and then this year, you know, he shot exceptionally well.
Yeah.
Was able to do things off of the bounce, was able to do things just moving off the ball. And he had like a pretty high, like self-creation load as well. And was, I'm pretty sure a consensus second team All-American. I thought was fantastic this year. I know that the age concerns are brought up every game that he ever played at Oregon. but he is somebody that I think along those lines is, somebody that you could really see is that 3-and-D wing. Who could do maybe a little bit more as a secondary playmaker as well. I just think there's a really good chance that he could step right in and give you some good minutes at the two or the three spot.
Yeah, being 24 years old, that's kind of the knock that people that don't like him take it. I mean, if he was 18, 19 years old, he'd be a lottery pick, no doubt. But, I mean, just doesn't really have a weakness. Like you said, big guard at 6'6", so brings nice size there, moves really well without the basketball, which is a skill that I always look at with wings. He's really good there. And the intensity that he plays with and the drive, I mean, that's something that you can't really teach. Always plays really hard. I mean, and defensively, and a lot of times when you have these guys that are kind of put in a box of a scorer or a shooter, they don't play defense as well. But, I mean, he can do it on both ends. And I just think when you look at 17, I mean, there's a train of thought where you want to take a swing and get a guy that has – potential long term, but I think Duarte kind of takes the guesswork out of it. I think when you take him, you know, at minimum, you're getting a solid rotation player, and I think what he has already shown and proven, I think, is good enough, and that's kind of why he's my favorite pick for the Grizzlies if he's there at 17, because I just think you know what you're getting. You know he's going to be a guy, like you said, plug and play, that can step in and play for you immediately. And when you're a playoff team, that can really help a guy that can just come in and play. And I think he projects as a 3-and-D wing, and the Grizzlies need more size on the wing because they have a lot of guys, but they're all kind of on the smaller side. With them being 6'6", I think that kind of fits in with them there. The last guy I want to discuss is another Pac-12 guy. He's 6'4", 215-pound freshman out of Arizona State, Josh Christopher. He's actually come in for the Grizzlies for a workout. He has a lot of fans here among Grizz Nation. What do you like about him, and what are some of the dislikes?
Josh is a tank. That's something you definitely like about him. His ability to score in transition has always been there. Really strong player. And he has some self-creation ability as well, and, you know, like, showed some really good things in terms of his pull-up game during his time at Arizona State. That team was kind of a mess, and it just...
To say the least.
yeah, exactly. Like, they were one of my most disappointing teams. Like, just in terms of talent, like, they had it.
Yeah, they should have been much better.
And I, you know, and obviously Josh got hurt and didn't play very many games, but he was somebody that I always liked at the high school level. His ability to score just was always something that stood out. Has some defensive potential too, and is like just really strong for a two guard. Like, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Josh ends up being like a first round pick. I'm thinking probably late first, but he didn't have the best freshman season and left you concerned in terms of, like, you know, the fact that his assist to turnover ratio wasn't very good. It didn't shoot very well from long range, but he is somebody that I just think with that body, with his ability to score around the basket, and with his potential as a pull-up shooter, those are all real positives and things that you could just see in, like, a scoring guard off of the bench, like, being a really good factor for your team.
Yeah, I really like him. I don't know if he's a guy that I'd take at 17. I mean, he's a guy if the Grizzlies decide to possibly trade down or pick up another pick in late first, early second, he's there. I love him. I think out of the guys in that range, if you're talking late first, early second, I think upside, he might be, if not the best, he's one of the best guys that could outperform their draft position. Because, I mean, like you said, you see a lot of things there to like. I don't think he's going to be a guy that's going to come in year one, really have an impact. And the Grizzlies have this MO of kind of taking older guys, as you talked about, Brandon Clark or Xavier Tillman or Desmond Bane. But this year, I mean, there's right now, unless they make some moves, there's not a lot of minutes and spots for a rookie. So, I mean, they have time to wait. He's a guy that they could send down to South Haven and with the Memphis Hustle and kind of groom down there and see what you have. But I like him, and I think it's a good prospect, and a lot of people like him here. I just don't know if I would take him at 17 if that's where they were selecting him. But when you look at this draft, who are some sleeper guys or some guys in the second round that you really like?
I would say a couple that come to mind. I think Jeremiah Robinson Earl is somebody that I've always thought could be, you know, a potential, like, good four guy. I just have always liked the way that he sees the game, his basketball IQ. He's just somebody that I think brings leadership, brings communication on the floor. I've seen fewer and fewer mock drafts have him as a first round pick, but I think he's another player that could just be a really solid second round pick. Aaron Henry is another player that comes to mind. The three wasn't necessarily there, but the defense, the passing ability, his ability as a ball handler. Those are just a couple guys, like, just off the top of my head that I like as second round picks. I think there are certainly going to be, like, some players that slip there. Kessler Edwards is somebody that I've always thought, like, you know, it's somebody that is a worthwhile gamble too, and could slip to the second round. He went to Pepperdine. During his three-year career there, he shot 39.5% from three, and is just a really great brings some good defensive versatility, makes great rotations. And then, yeah, like, you know, that shooting profile on a really good sample size. So, yeah, those are just a few guys off the top of my head. Who are some of the guys you like in the second round? Like, I'd love to know.
Yeah, and real quick, man, two of your guys, Robinson Earl and Kessler Edwards, Derek Murray, our last guest, we asked him the same question, and those are two of the guys, that are the three that he likes. So you guys are
on
the same wavelength there. In the second round, Josh Primo is a guy that's extremely young, 18 years old, might be the
Canadian
youngest
guy.
Player. Yeah, might be the youngest player in the draft. Yeah, out of Canada, played down in Alabama, is a guy that I think has a lot of potential. I mean, you just see the length, the wingspan at 6'5", 6'9", 6'4", 6'9", wingspan. Just the defensive potential there. I think the potential to guard 1, 2, 3, maybe even some really small ball 4. It's going to take a while with him. There's no doubt about that. He's not going to be a plug-and-play guy, a guy that gives you anything for the first couple of years. But I think long-term, I think I really, really like his potential. And I think he's a guy that you could look up 4 or 5 years down the line. You're like, why was this guy a second-round pick if he dropped there? Now, he's been moving up boards. Possibility that I think that he might even go in late first right now, but that's a guy that I really like. David,
I think he's going first round, man.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, my second round guy has been pretty well the same all along, and that's Joel Aie. We didn't get to see the best of him at Gonzaga. He took a back seat willingly to, you know, Suggs and Kispert. And I think, I truly believe that he could be the best player out of Gonzaga in this draft. And people look at me crazy. They're like, better than Suggs? And like, I know, like, I'm aware of what Suggs done, and I know what he brings to the table. And I'm not implying that I think Suggs is going to be a bust by any stretch. Yeah. But if you go back, and I did not do this until I talked to Raphael Barlow about this. I went back and watched watch film of AI on the French national team. And when he's the guy in the offense, he is electric, man. Like he played extremely well. And I think it was either 18 or 19 U tournament that had Team USA had Cade Cunningham, Evan Mobley, like all of these guys that are at the top of this draft.
Yeah, that's
and AI was one of the best players in that tournament. So I really think that he's going to end up going in the second round. And somebody's going to get a steal on him. And that is, I'm not sold on Kispert. I think that he's going to stay in the NBA because he can shoot. And if you can shoot, you know, JJ Redick can't even spell defense. And he's what, a 14, 15 year veteran. You know, you don't have to play defense in this league if you can knock down shots. And I think that is what Kispert is going to be. Could very well be eating crow later on, but I do not believe in him at all. If I had a choice at 17 between AI and Kispert, I'm taking AI 100 times out of 100, bro. 100 times out of 100.
I don't hate the take. What I will say is the U19s is as valuable of a scouting opportunity as it is. These guys play like radically different positions and like a different level. So I have a really tough time like seeing Joel Aie like killing it at the U19s and saying like, oh, he's going to have that same role in the NBA as compared to like what he did at Gonzaga. But the things that you loved about him at Gonzaga, like he was a fantastic rebounder for his size. So like nose for the ball, really good playing off the ball as well. Like a great cutter. And then has some defensive ability as a guard as well. I've always liked Joel Aie as well. I think that he could be a really good complementary player and then maybe bring like some of those similar skills from U19s. But yeah, I see him as more of that complementary piece there's a chance that he could play that role really well. I do have a hard time believing that he will be better than Jalen Suggs, but the Kispert versus AI discussion, I'm there for that. I like that take.
And I know that there's going to have to be like, I realize there's going to have to be growth, right? Because right now, head to head, Suggs is better than AI. I'm not implying that. But I like his skill set. I like what he is able to do. And also, you know, I'm aware like the FIBA stuff is kind of tough because Patty Mills kind of looks like prime Jordan whenever he plays for you in basketball.
Always so, have, like, man. Always have.
I mean, I know that that's, you know, sometimes you get a little more freedom over there. There's a lot of different roles, but I like, whenever I was going back and watching that film, I was like, man, this guy, you know, you can watch certain guys, and I go back to, I feel like it was 3 years ago. When did Devontae Graham have his breakout season for the Hornets? That was the 19-20 season, right?
Yeah, it was last year.
Yeah.
So I watched him in preseason against the Grizzlies, and he was torching the Grizzlies. And I told my son right then, I'm like, this kid is going to – I don't know that he's going to be an all-star, but he's going to have a heck of a year. You could just see the difference in speed, his ability to get to the basket. Like, he manipulated the defense exactly where he wanted it so he could get to his spot. And you can watch film with AI and kind of see some of the same things, although the level of competition is clearly different. So, you know, that's, you always have to take that into consideration. But he is one guy, you know, I feel like I've done this since I've been diving into the draft. There's been one guy that I watch film and I absolutely love that person. And AI is the guy for me.
That's cool. And one thing with Devontae, like, that I think it may be a little bit different with Joel Ayayi is he was a great 3-point shooter at Kansas, right? Like, I think that those percentages and that's been like a huge part of his NBA role too. And he's been one of those guys who's had a really tough time like scoring inside the paint. Whereas I think Joel Ayayi always was pretty like, you know, great inside 2-point range. So yeah, slightly different, but I see where you're coming from, and them possibly like knowing their roles and really excelling.
Yeah, I know we're running a little bit long here, but a few more guys I want to get in before we get off of here. And I want to go back a little bit. Franz Wagner is a guy that I wasn't a big fan of. You see these mock drafts and he's going top 10, and I'm wondering why.
Yeah, he's going top 10.
Yeah, and I'm wondering why people like him so much, and we've had lots of guests. I've talked to a lot of people. A lot of people love him, so I continue to watch tape on him. And I think I've kind of done a 180 on him. I think his defensive potential was a lot better than I saw when I watched him live and watching film. What are your thoughts on Wagner?
Yeah, I think what always was the upside with him was that he was somebody who was quite scalable as well. You know, like a combo forward, good passer, had shooting potential. And then defensively, like, you know, really knows his stuff. Plus, he was, like, really young as a freshman. And, like, he's younger than some of the freshmen in the draft this year. Like, I think he's a month or so younger than even, like, Scotty Barnes. And, so I think that's kind of the upside with him. And I have heard that there's, like, no way he's going past Sacramento. So, it seems like he's... really, most of draft Twitter like loved Franz Wagner throughout the year or even going into this year. And they just like the fact that he's somebody with wing potential who you could play in the playoffs and can hold his own on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, I definitely see that now. Watching him live, like I said, watching Michigan throughout the year, I just didn't really get it. But watching the ball on film, I mean, 6'8", 6'9", a legit guy with wing skills that can shoot the basketball. I think he only shot 34%, but I think he's a better shooter than that. I think you'll see that in the NBA. I mean, he's a complete player. I think his defense will translate, and that's something that I really hadn't seen. And I think he's going to be really, really good defensively. Now, going back to the second round guys, Vince Leinberg is a international prospect, a guy out of Belgium, 6'11", not a big. He is a 6'11" guard, legit guard skills. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, now I know you talked to Rafael Barlow. he's an intriguing guy. Like, it seems like he has a lot of the same skill set that Alexei Pokuševski was bringing last year. Not necessarily that level of like fluidity or athleticism, but somebody that, you know, can stretch the floor, good passer, can handle the ball, like with that size. And I've listened to the interviews with him as well. Like, you know, outstanding personality. It seems like he's going in and really impressing a lot of the NBA teams that he's worked out for sometimes. And he managed to, a lot of people, a lot of the international players, like early entry guys pulled out of the draft just
yesterday. Yeah, yesterday.
Kept his name in. So yeah, there must be something going right there. And I know Rafael was really early on him. He was a player like I had even heard about like going a couple drafts back now, where there was always intrigue. But yeah, now I think people are really seeing a role for him.
Yeah, I mean, he's been going all over with the workouts. He came in for the Grizzlies a couple weeks ago, but it seems like he's been all over. He's very active on social media, actually talking with people and responding. So he seems like a pretty cool guy. Seems to be excited. Yeah, talks about how much he loves being over here in the States. So he's a fun player, man. I think he'd be a really intriguing prospect if he was there for the Grizzlies at 51. I don't think he'll be there. I think the intrigue has grown now to the point where I think he'll go a little bit earlier than that. But I would love to see him end up in a Grizzlies uniform. But the last guy that I want to ask you about, but the last guy that I want to ask you about is kind of a polarizing prospect, National College Player of the Year, Luka Garza, who's projected to go late in the second round. Man, I liked him, and I've said that for the Grizzlies, if he's there at 51, I would like him there. I've got a lot of pushback on that, and I'm saying, man, if you can get a guy at 51 that you feel like is going to stick in the league, is going to be able to carve out a role, then I think you're happy with that, and I think he's that guy. I know the potential's not that high. I mean, the foot speed, will he be able to guard? But I think supposedly he's dropped some weight. I mean, he could really shoot the basketball at 6'11". I think he's going to be a guy that's going to have a pretty long career in the NBA. What are your thoughts on Garza?
All right. I have a lot.
Good.
First off, I like the work ethic, the intangibles, like those things, very positive.
Yeah.
Luka Garza, and, you know, obviously, the past 2 years, he's been one of the best players in college basketball. The translation is something I have a much tougher time with, just because I think that he is, like, at best, a not very good defender. And then also, like, while he is, like, near 6'11 and everything like that, I don't want to say that this is definite, like, his standing reach, because I know how often the combine is off with standing reaches, and I can point out a few where like I know for sure that they are. But he measured in at 8'11 and a half. Now, the average NBA center is 9'2". You look at the two centers who are in the NBA finals, Brooke Lopez, DeAndre Ayton, they're both around 9'5". So Luka Garza is giving up like that amount of length and standing reach to like tons of centers in the NBA. So that's having a tough time scoring against them down low, and then defensively. Then you look at the foot speed and the vertical. Like, he measured last in both standing vert and max vert at the NBA draft combine. Now, let's say his standing reach is off by like a couple inches. That means he's last by a couple more inches.
Yeah.
With him having lost all of that weight. And then I think he was like last in the sprinting by like 0.16 milliseconds.
Wow.
So yeah, like I think the athleticism threshold that if you go back and you look at like centers who have been kind of bad at like the NBA draft combine athleticism, they either don't really work out or they're enormous. Like Brooke Lopez, enormous. Nikola Vucevic, enormous. So yeah, like I think that's where I'm not exactly sure about Garza's role. And then if he's just like a big man who's stretching the floor, like, is he going to do that well enough where you're not worried about what he brings on the defensive end of the floor? So that's why I'm a bit concerned about Luka Garza. Now, do you just kind of like roll with what he's done in college and say like, oh, like, you know, this is possibly translatable? Like that could be as well. But yeah, I'm really not exactly sure like what you think, or what like people who are high on Luka Garza kind of think his role is going to be. And the people that I have talked to who like are high on him, I think have very unrealistic kind of takes on what his role is going to be. So I'm just wondering what you feel like his role would be and why you feel like that would be valuable to the Grizzlies.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think he's going to be like a big time player or really be a major piece. I just think when you pick it at 51, I know that you could say, oh, well, if you take it 51, that's where you should take a swing on the upside. To me, I just think at 51, I think he's one of the safest guys you can take there. I think he'll be a guy that can come in and knock down some shots for you at times. I don't think he's going to anything beyond that. I think, like you said, the shortcomings are just too much athletically. I don't know if he'll be able to guard. So he's not going to guy that's going to come in and play major minutes. I just think he's going to be one of those guys, smart, high IQ, can knock down shots at 6'11", that'll just stick around. And I think at 51, if you can get a guy like that, I think that's a positive. But that's kind of my thoughts on it. Again, I'm not on any misnomer. He's going to be a guy that's going to get major minutes or be the guy that he was in college and come in and score 18 points for you, anything like that. I think those people that think that, I think they're thinking about too much, put too much expectations on him. But
no, I absolutely like understand that kind of like thinking about his role in the NBA. Like he is a guy who, like, I think from the start is likely going to play like most like 12, 15 minutes a game.
Yeah.
My other thing with him is like, he wasn't really like a high level decision maker or passer. And like, you know, you look at a guy like Frank Kaminsky, who like, he was dominant his last couple years at Wisconsin, not necessarily up to Garza's level, but his team was better. And he was a great passer and, you know, could handle the ball a bit as well. So yeah, those are just a few of the things where I'm kind of, I understand people not being incredibly high on Luka Garza as an NBA prospect.
Yeah, I think like matchup dependent role player would be a good label for him.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So like, that's kind of what I'm thinking.
The Grizzlies, the Grizzlies play Brandon Clark at the five some, right? And so if you're matching up against a Rudy Gobert or a Nikola Jokic or Vucevic, like they're going to destroy Brandon Clark because he's not strong enough. He just doesn't have it. And I think Garza would be a guy like end of the bench guy that could match up better against some of those bigs.
Are you sure?
Because I mean, he'll be better. He'll be better than Brandon Garza. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying like it's not a guarantee. Like he's just he's a bigger frame, right?
Yeah. And so, he's bigger than Brandon Clark for sure.
Yeah.
And I think that
like that kind of thought of like being better than Brandon Clark, but again, like
hold on, like did I'm you just saying, say there, he just said he's better than Brandon Clark
and Jokic and Garza? Like it's pretty huge.
Yeah. Of course. I would just like, I was using those guys as big body centers, right? You know, some of the other guys that play the five.
I'm about Garza. Like he's considered big bodied.
Right.
And I'm not sure if he's like up to the size of some of these other players.
And you may be right. And that's, you know, the Grizzlies already have a non-athletic big man playing the five in JV. And so having a backup in the same, you know, like I see kind of the pushback that people give Isaac because of that. Like you already have JV. I mean, why do you want it? But I see Isaac's side of it of, you know, it's pick 51, you know, the odds of you catching lightning in a bottle are pretty slim right there.
It's
happened maybe a handful of times ever. And so why not take a guy that, you know, his ceiling's not very high, but, you know, maybe he's got a decent floor. And we don't really know what that floor is going to be with Garza because you don't know athletically what he's going to be able to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, with his size and what he done at the college level, maybe you think, okay, he done this on the college level. Maybe some of this will translate, but there's been plenty of bigger body guys at the college level. Tyler Hansbrough comes to mind, dominant at UNC.
Yeah,
then he was only a role player for a few years in the NBA. He just didn't translate. So, true. You know,
he wasn't huge. Like that was another thing with him too. I would say more athletic than Luka Garza, but didn't shoot as well. I get it. Like when you're at 51, you like you take a guy who you think is going to come in, fit with your team, and somebody, you know, you kind of have a vision for, which I see with you, Isaac, with Luka Garza. And then the other thing with the Grizz is that they are in need of shooting. Like that is something that they've needed for the past few years. So I can understand like really wanting somebody to come in and be able to stretch the floor. Like You know, you like you have Jaren, who's been fantastic at a high volume when he's playing.
Yeah.
But yeah, you could certainly use a little bit more of stretching the floor, I would say, like from pretty much every position on the roster.
Definitely, man. We're really good stuff, man. Hopefully we'll be welcoming Chris Duarte to Buff City that next Thursday night. But
absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, man, we're going to put you on the hot seat before we get out of here, man. Tonight, NBA Finals, Game 6. Do the Bucks close it out, or does Phoenix force a Game 7?
Is Scott Foster refereeing this game?
He is.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I think Milwaukee's going to be pretty happy tonight.
Yeah, man, I
feel like the Bucks are going to close it out. I honestly want them to, because for selfish reasons, I have there's an exhibition game going on in Eugene on Thursday. It's the Always Us TBT team, and they're going to be playing some Oregon alumni. And I believe one of them may be a Grizzly, so I'm crossing my fingers for that. So, I think I might get to see Dylan Brooks play at Mac Court on Thursday. But I think Milwaukee's going to close it out tonight. And Scott Foster, I don't think helps matters for Phoenix.
Yeah, man, I've seemed like I'm in the extreme minority, man. Everybody, I said Phoenix is going to force a Game 7. I just got a feeling that Chris Paul is going to come out and redeem himself. He's had some struggles here of late. I just find it hard to believe that he's going to go out like that. But, I mean, the Bucks have been figured something out, man. They've won 3 in a row, so we'll see. I'm excited about the game tonight, man. But before we
is
get out of here.
Is Drew Holiday going to, like, be as insane as he was in Game 5?
And that's the thing that you've seen with the Bucks, their role players, Holiday and Milton, haven't always shown up. Now, they've been good for a few games now, but we've seen that they can be up and down. So, I mean, they're going to need those kind of performances, I think, to pull it out tonight. And I just got a feeling that the Suns are going to find some way to eke one out of here, and we're going to be talking about a Game 7. But before we get out of here,
it was amazing they did that on the road, right?
Yeah.
Like, that was the other thing.
Yeah, like, I couldn't believe it, man. They shocked me, man. Yeah, I wasn't expecting that at all. I thought Phoenix would come out like a house of fire and then really – really win that one. But Bucks came in there, man. Weathered the storm early, man. Were able to pull that one out in Phoenix, man. Really, and crazy play at the end by Drew Holiday, man. It passed for the
fantastic
dunk to Giannis, man. It's what about that block in game four, man?
Game four?
Yeah. Just one of the best defensive plays I've ever seen, man.
Legendary.
Just good stuff, man. But again, man, before we get out of here, man, let people know where they can find you.
On Twitter, I'm NBA Draft Mikey V. Viseland is at Viseland, V-I-S-E-L-A-N-D. And then you can find my work at Pro Insight. We have a lot of great work about the NBA draft, up and coming high school players. We have our Q&A series. We have videos, and we have PI Pulse, which is our written work. So yeah, the last event that I went to was the Pangos All-American Camp in Las Vegas. And I had a long article about a number of prospects from that camp. So yeah, feel free to check out Perspective Insight and check out Viseland.
Yeah, man, make sure you go out and check my guy out, man. He really knows his stuff. Always enjoy his insight. Thank you for taking a little time to join us today. We'd definitely like to have you back on in the future.
Yeah, thank you so much, and I'd love to be back on. It was great talking with you guys.
Yeah, man, we're going to go ahead and get out of here, man. Again, great stuff. Make sure you go over to @HoopBallGrizz. Give us a follow. We really appreciate that. You can follow me on Twitter @Isaac_Rivals, @ISAAC_Rivals. You can follow my man David Williams @DWill2111. We'll be back later this week with more draft coverage continuing all draft all the time here at HoopBall. And until next time, we're gone.
This has been a HoopBall presentation.